BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
What we're looking at down there is the tip of Manhattan.
New York, mid-90s.
And one block off of Wall Street sits the Chase Manhattan Bank building. This 60-story skyscraper was built in the late 1950s.
Mike O'Connor of Chase Manhattan Bank is talking to a BBC television documentary team about its flagship headquarters.
One of the products used was the sprayed asbestos manufactured by Turner & Newell in England.
The bank is taking what's reported to be the biggest property damage lawsuit in the world against the T&N Asbestos Manufacturing Company for $185 million.
Now, 30 years later, we have to remove the asbestos from the building at an enormous cost to the bank and to its shareholders.
And why is this relevant in the UK?
A judge gave American lawyers the power to search T&N's British headquarters. They brought back so many documents, Chase has had to set up a vault of its own.
In our case, the judge really gave us the power to roam through the repository, to see for ourselves and to examine the documents as they existed in the drawers.
The same documents T&N have been refusing to hand over to legal teams representing dying people in the UK. Different jurisdictions, different rules. The BBC has been following the story too.
Whether they'll make any difference to claims in the UK remains to be seen.
I've never heard such scandalous behaviour.
I'm Ophelia Byrne, and this is Assume Nothing, Killer Dust, Episode 7, Guilty Knowledge.
We were taken up to the sixth floor and shown into a locked room.
Mike O'Connor was vice president and senior associate counsel at Chase Manhattan Bank, with a US court judgment that allows him to rifle through a major corporation's files in England. Just imagine.
Very large room filled with filing cabinets, rows upon rows of filing cabinets, and sort of not really knowing where to begin. We walked around, we pulled open the drawers at random, and just stuffed with papers.
Papers that Turner and Newell have claimed don't exist. O'Connor has a five-strong team to examine a million documents.
They used to go into the Turner and Newell offices, and they talked quietly, they said, because they were surrounded by their enemy, if you like, and who were furious that they were going through their documents.
Documentary maker Jill Turton has worked on two major films on asbestos. She's been particularly interested in an asbestos factory in Armley, Leeds, around which people have fallen ill from a cancer most often caused by asbestos, mesothelioma. Chase Manhattan Bank is following litigation related to that Leeds factory. The bank's interested because one of the asbestos products from the factory's owners, Turner and Newell, was sprayed on 60 floors of its New York headquarters. Chase is suing them for compensation. The bank brings T&N's documents back to New York. Then they start sending them right back to the lawyers representing sick people who lived around the Armley factory in the UK.
They copied them and they hand them over to solicitors and to the media. I think it was in their interest for as many people as possible to know what they knew.
They used to send me packages from America to all them.
John Pickering's the solicitor who started the Armley factory legal case. Another solicitor, Adrian Budgeon, is also fighting for his client over T&N's Armley plant.
Their discovery, their disclosure rules were much wider than ours in the UK.
Both solicitors have clients who believe their disease was the result of childhood exposure to asbestos, having lived and played close to T&N's Armley factory. Chase Manhattan Bank, Adrian says.
We're quite keen for us to be putting pressure on T&N in its own backyard.
But both solicitors know that having some documents is one thing. Being allowed to use them in an English court is quite another.
We kind of had got them through the back door.
Will they be admissible? First to test the legality of the use of the papers, journalists.
The Scotsman, how Britain's biggest asbestos company resisted safety standards.
The Scotsman, front page, 15th of July 1993, says top asbestos firm kept safety risks secret. Inside, an editorial declares,
"The papers are not a pretty read."
The Scotsman has obtained copies of some of the Chase Manhattan collection of Turner and Newell documents. Pictures of the papers stand out to me. They refer to a Newell's Glasgow employee, Charles Coyle, who in the 1950s is dying of asbestosis. T&N's solicitors advise,
"The man has a very poor expectation of life, and if he does succumb, the claim will not be any more expensive. And without his evidence, the solicitors will be in greater difficulties. In short, I do not think we have anything to lose by leaving the matter in abeyance."
Let it play out. Won't cost us more, might even cost us less. It's exactly what they do. Charles dies. His widow accepts £500. Turner's had expected a £4,000 payout. It declares,
"This is a most satisfactory outcome."
Some of T&N's secrets are scattered all over the media. What will, what can T&N do?
The Scotsman. New evidence of asbestos cover-up.
Despite the healthy bank balance, the company's dirty laundry is still being aired in public. T&N decides to act.
A British multinational has taken legal action in the United States in an attempt to prevent the Scotsman revealing how crucial medical evidence on the dangers of asbestos was suppressed.
But T&N's legal action failed.
The judge said they can send them to who they like.
The documents are out, legally, in American law anyway.
Mr. Howe.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to you about Turner and Newell.
Right. T&N, please.
T&N.
T&N's most powerful man in the mid-1990s appears, involuntarily, in a BBC TV documentary, Taking Liberties, An Acceptable Level of Death. At a glance, T&N is now an engineering and automotive components company, pivoting away from asbestos. As profits at T&N rise, so too do asbestos claims, especially in the US. But asbestos is still coming in from African mines, and T&N is still using it and still making millions.
Its chairman is Colin Hope. He heads a billion-pound empire. The company is a pillar of the commercial establishment.
Colin Hope has taken over T&N after Sir Francis Toombs' retirement. Toombs becomes a life peer. T&N tries to become future-facing.
In its annual reports and in polite company, you won't find any mention of the dreaded A word, asbestos, even though it still makes asbestos products.
Reporter John Ware doorsteps chairman Colin Hope at a noisy black tie business function. He quizzes him about the company's UK and US differences on documents.
Can you explain to me why it is that you're allowing your board to tell British courts that you have no documents that are relevant to health and asbestos issues, whereas representatives of your board are telling American courts that you have got many of these
there
documents?
There is absolutely no difference whatsoever between the position between British courts and American courts. We have carefully kept documents which other companies have not kept related to our asbestos position. We are absolutely open, truthful and honest, and the documents are available for those courts who have a proper right. We are not prepared to allow those documents go to the press.
Not the press, no.
The press or anybody else in the media who thinks they have an entitlement to them. Legally, the courts may have access to those documents that they are properly entitled to. I've never heard such nonsense being brought up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Then Hope doubles back.
Mr. Hope, why don't you answer my questions? When are you going to answer these questions?
I've never heard such scandalous behaviour.
While all this is going on, back in Armley, near Leeds, life is getting tougher for June Hancock.
She was poorly.
She's already lost her mother, Nana May, to mesothelioma. Both lived and worked outside, but close to, the Roberts Armley factory, owned by T&N. Now June, too, has mesothelioma. Her daughter Kimberly and her son, Russell, care for her.
The illness is horrific and... Sorry. Sometimes she was okay, sometimes she really wasn't okay. That's the nature of the disease.
Was there any fear? Because to take on a huge, big, multinational company...
There was a lot of fear. She thought they would try and settle, then they wouldn't have been accountable. And that frightened her more than the disease itself, I think.
June has another concern too, about their legal case.
Everything was dragged out. They kept leaving it to the last minute for everything. She said they didn't expect her to live.
Even if you struggle to believe that, think back to the case of Charles Coyle. How T&N, to its own satisfaction, delayed that case from coming to court. A £4,000 expected settlement became £500.
This is where John Battle helps enormously.
June's solicitor, Adrian Budgeon, really needs access to as many company documents as he can get. The Scotsman newspaper has published a select few, not enough to win their case. Plus, they may not be admissible in an English court. Adrian needs to ensure he can use more of the documents Chase Manhattan Bank has released, and he needs to ensure the court can't refuse them. And that's why John Battle is crucial.
John was the local MP for Leeds West, said, well, look, I'll place these documents in the House of Commons library and then you can refer to them in the English proceedings because they're publicly available.
The court date's looming. It's already a lot of reading, but who knows if the documents are relevant to their case in Armley. Then one day, solicitor John Pickering sees something a bit odd.
A lorry came to my office in Oldham. It was full of thousands and thousands of pages of documents.
Adrian's getting deliveries too.
TNN deluged us with tens of thousands of documents.
Gosh.
And this was in the weeks going up to trial.
This is a document dump, designed, one of the solicitors believes, to baffle their efforts by sheer weight of volume.
That was what they did, leaving it to the last minute, think that maybe the plaintiff solicitor won't be able to cope with all this stuff.
You want records? We'll give you records. In court, T&N claim they've had problems identifying the relevant documents in their possession. Turns out there are documents in their possession, custody or power. About 27,000 of them. June knows what she thinks.
Oh, they lied. They absolutely lied.
How do you get to read all the documents in time for the trial?
Well, that was a big problem. I would sit in this room 7 days a week.
We had to scale up. I had to recruit a team of paralegals.
But scale is not the only problem.
They were in no particular order, higgledy-piggledy, but it was important to read all of them. It was a filtering exercise to read what we thought were the more important ones, showing their guilty knowledge, essentially, of the risks of asbestos.
So is that guilty knowledge in those documents?
Yes.
The court sits. Listen to the whole series right now, first, on BBC Sounds.
A billionaire Christian family is building a huge collection of artefacts for their Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C.
During that time, there were 30,000 items, probably.
But a scholar-turned-super sleuth starts asking questions.
The magnitude of what I found out is incredible.
I'm Ben Lewis. I investigate the darker side of the arts and antiquities world, but nothing prepared me for this story.
Something truly, truly wrong was going on.
Looters, forgeries, and a scandal of biblical proportions. From BBC Radio 4, Intrigue, Word of God. Listen first on BBC Sounds.